Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on incorrigible delinquency when we come back. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it should be pretty obvious to all of us that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They have been banned from our public institutions. And they are banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And we're teaching the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions, and we've all made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. And that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. Now, there is at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, common law, natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. It's the place to start. Why don't you call right now? The number is 417-273-4967. Just call and order. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, last time we were talking about the doctrine of parens patriae, and I said, you know what the problem is here is that we've all voted this into office. This goes back 3,000 years. Our forefathers, way back in 1000 BC, started the process by rejecting God and the Ten Commandments and adopting what they thought at that time was a more liberal political process. They wanted a king like all the nations around them. They wanted a political process where they could air their grievances. Remember, God is an autocrat, the creator of the universe. He never consulted any of us about his laws, about his priorities, about his plan. He just implemented it. You and I find ourselves in the plan, the plot, the participation in it. In fact, in the Bible, he calls us clay. And he likens himself to a potter, you know, sitting at his wheel, and he's working his clay, and he's creating his pots and his inventions and so on. And he asks this rhetorical question. He says, does the clay say to the potter, why have you made me thus? That's quite a statement. Think about it. Does the clay say to the potter, why have you made me the way I am? And the answer is, no, it doesn't. The clay is an inanimate part of the process. It doesn't have any input at all into the process. It ultimately is going to be the vessel, but it isn't going to decide its shape, color, form. Human beings find themselves in the same dilemma. You know, we're a created product by this master creator. And that's what he's asking. He says, hey, Bob, who in the hell do you think you are asking me why I made you thus? So from his point of view, and you can see the likely or the logical conclusion to it, and you've got a child, you did not consult the child about this invention. The child shows up on the scene. He is the vessel. He's being created. And as time progresses along, you're going to teach that child to be a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew. The child doesn't have an input into his religious upbringing. You know, nobody goes to the child, you know, and says, gee, son, would you like to be a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew? Would you like to be a Republican or a Democrat? Liberal or conservative? No, the kid just finds himself here on the potter's wheel, and he's just being manipulated and being created and molded. And all of us are the net sum total of all of that molding and all of those experiences that we've had in our lives. And, you know, I'm the way I am, and I believe what I believe, and I do what I do, because that was the way I was molded and shaped and formed. I didn't really have any input into it. Nobody ever told me, hey, Gordon, do you want to be a Republican or a Democrat? Liberal or conservative? Catholic, Protestant, or Jew, Muslim, or something else. People don't choose their religion. They typically don't even choose their politics. They're raised that way. It's the school teacher who lambasted. I remember when I was a kid in school, all the school teachers seemed to be liberals. Now, our family were all Republicans and conservatives, and all the school teachers, well, not all, but most, were liberals. And they were always espousing liberal philosophies and debunking conservative philosophy. And politicians and news leaders and newspaper people, they do the same thing today, Republicans and Democrats alike. And the values that we find in our Constitution are totally abandoned by Republicans and Democrats. Think about it. You know, the Republicans over here, this is George Bush. Now, remember, he's running for election. He says, well, I'm the conservative candidate. John McCain says he's the conservative candidate. Well, a conservative is somebody who maintains the status quo, somebody that stays with the old philosophies. A conservative Catholic is someone who stays with Latin in the church service. The liberals, the progressive, they're the ones that want to bring in some new languages, make the change. These are the liberals. They want change. See? The conservative, he says, leave it the way it is. The liberal says, let's change it. Well, conservative and liberal philosophies over here, when we apply this to the doctrine of parens patriae, or incorrigible delinquency, at some point in time, somebody wanted to make a change. We didn't have incorrigible delinquency in this country until the last 50 or 75 years. I use the term incorrigible delinquency. That's where you can't change it. When a child is 18 months old, you can change his delinquency. When that kid's 18 years old, you ain't changing jack diddly squat. When you get to the point this kid's shooting people off the street corners, you ain't going to change very much in that kid. You can punish him, you can lock him up, you can do all kinds of things to him, make him hurt bad. He may reform, but if he does, he's going to reform on his own. There's anything that you're going to do to him. You lost control of that clay a long time ago. So I'm just going to, you know, I thought here in the last program here in the series, let's think about what it is that we can do to create or to change this process. What can you do with your 18-month-old? Now, from the time they're born until they're about a year and a half old, children learn a lot. Babies learn a tremendous amount. They learn to listen. They learn language. They learn music. There's all kinds of things that children learn. But when it comes to discipline and self-control, it isn't until mobility comes into play that you really make any progress. I mean, you can't tell him to come here, go there, stand up, sit down. Hell, this kid can't hardly, he can't control his bowels. He can't control his bladder. He can't control much anything. But when they get to be, you know, a year and a half, 2 years old, they start walking around. They start understanding words, and they can understand here, come and go, and they laugh, and you play with them and one thing and another. If you'll start out when they're young, 18 to 24 months old, 2-3 years old, remember this area called the terrible twos? Children aren't made for the terrible twos. They're just ignored. And the terrible twos are just a natural part of what's going to happen. If the wheel is turning around and you don't shape this thing over here, well, then it's just going to turn around as a blob. Takes a little shaping. Little children are smarter than dogs, and they can learn faster, and they can learn better tricks. Now, when a child learns to obey mother and father, and this is what the fifth commandment tells us over here, you know, honor your father and mother, that it may be well with you. In fact, it has a benefit to it. If you'll do that, God says, I will give you long life. I will give you many extra years. 70 is what you're entitled to, but I'll give you 80, 90, or 100 if you will obey that commandment. That's a commandment that it tells you, long life. He will give you long life. He will lengthen your days. If you want to get to be an old man and an older, you practice this law, and it'll be of great benefit to you. Now, it's of great benefit to the child also. The sooner the child learns that there's authority, that there's a chain of command, that I'm not left to my own devices, the better for him. And in the book of Proverbs, I showed you early on in the series that there's a series of children or child statutes that guide us in raising children. Well, it raises children the way God designed and decreed. I mean, the Creator out here, you know, he's not an imbecile. He's fully familiar with delinquency, children. He said, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Boy, that's true. But the rod of correction will drive it far from it. That means we need some corporal punishment. Now, in today's society, the society, that is, the people who own the children. See, you've already given your children to the state. Wouldn't it be kind of neat if before you got a marriage license and a birth certificate, you know, before you take the marriage step, why don't you think about, do you really need the state of Texas in your bedroom? Are you really so incompetent that you cannot produce children and then feed them, clothe them, house them, and educate them? Because if you are, why don't you reconsider that and don't have any children? If you can't feed them, clothe them, house them, and educate them, why don't you leave that to somebody else? Instead of raising this juvenile delinquent to go out on the streets marauding around, killing people, and causing great damage, why don't you just don't produce one of those? Kind of a wild new idea. Now, if you think that you probably could, with a little guidance, produce a baby, and then can you feed it? Can you earn enough money to buy clothes for it? And then maybe educate it. Have you ever thought about educating the child yourself? And then here's a kicker. Have you thought about educating the child to the law of God? Give him a legal education. Hell, he might even go on to the Harvard Law School. Did you know the Harvard Law School, up until 1942, started all incoming freshmen in the book of Hebrews? Hebrews, that's a book in the Bible, book in the New Testament. They started them on Blackstone's commentaries and the book of Hebrews. The Apostle Paul had a legal education. He was a prosecuting attorney, studied law at the feet of Gamaliel. He had a private tutor, like being educated at the feet of Oliver Wendell Holmes, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The Apostle Paul had a legal education. That legal education is mandated in the Bible, and God wants everybody educated in the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments doesn't have anything to do with religion, doesn't have anything to do with turning around three times and shaking bat's knuckles under the full moon. It's a legal principle of law, and there's only one other called the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, or the Babylonian Mystery Religion. The Ten Commandments in reality deal with social duties, economic capacity, political capacity, business rights, monetary capacity, property rights, educational duties, health responsibilities, moral duties, and law or legal responsibilities. And that's what you get with the Communist Manifesto. It also is a social, economic, political, business, monetary, property, educational, health, moral, and legal system. That's all there is on planet Earth. That's all there ever has been. You got the one model over here that your creator gave you. You got the second model that Satan gave you in the Garden of Eden, and we've been following it ever since. Now, today, we're following that satanic model, the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, and I would contend to our hurt. Now, I'm not going to change 300 million Americans. That isn't going to happen. I'm not going to abolish the Federal Reserve. I'm not going to abolish the income tax. Those are institutions that are ingrained in the American psyche, and Americans love it. And they're going to continue on with it until it destroys them. I just don't want to get destroyed with them. And if you're one of those that are looking around and you're saying, oh my God, I'm not really sure that this thing can hold together the way it's going. It can't. It isn't. It won't. So for those few of us that are concerned about where is all of this leading us, what is the ultimate outcome to this? It's all bad. There's nothing good coming out of this. You can't go out here and practice sodomy and unjust weights and balances, thefts, murders, and get away with that. That isn't good. That dog ain't going to hunt. I'm telling you, it ain't going to hunt. It hasn't worked for anybody in the past. We've tried these fiat currencies, paper money, unjust weights and balances are called in the Bible. We've tried that for thousands of years. We tried it in the United States of America. We started in 1695 or 6, I believe it was, in North Carolina. We tried it. Every colony followed that paper money. We tried it until 1756. And then we reformed ourselves. Then we fell back into our old ways, and then we practiced fiat paper money until 1783, until the continental currency at the close of the Revolutionary War collapsed, and soldiers and sailors were taking their money, their pay, and they were jokingly having tailors sew the money into suits so that they could wear their money. That's how worthless it became. It's happened in every country in the world, and it's coming again to a city near you. All right, now, that being the case, the alternative to that is gold and silver coin, just weights and balances, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Real property, to deal in property, and to do that produces prosperity. There's an opposite to it. And here's the beauty of it. You don't have to convince your neighbors to do this with you. You can just do it all by yourself. You don't have to persuade all of the Republicans to vote this way and all the Democrats to vote that way to get a consensus of opinion so that we can get our gold and silver back so that we can get off of. It isn't necessary. Leave all of those people to their own devices. It'll lead them to their own destruction. Take a look out in California. I mentioned this the last program as a student in class this week, and he said, have you noticed the fires in California? Did you notice that the Supreme Court just legalized sodomy out there, that is, the same-sex marriage? I said, no, it had not crossed my mind, but it does now that you bring it up. And it just reminded me of a subliminal message coming from God himself that says, can you people remember Sodom and Gomorrah? This is the worst series of fires in the history of California. Early in the fire season, too. I mean, this is July, you know. And they're going to have fires in August and September, probably into October. And they're just starting the fire season. They've already blown that $83 million, I think, was the number they used for their fire season. Hell, they blew that the first 2 weeks in a series of fire out there in California in July, at the end of June and beginning of July. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. You know, this God over here that I've been telling you about, the different God, and I don't deny it. Christians don't practice the Ten Commandments, and they don't follow the Scripture. They've got their own religious ideology. That's fine, and you're entitled to it, and the Constitution guarantees it, and you're certainly entitled to it. But, you know, it has an impact upon me and everybody else around me. And that's because the fires in California, every time you have a national disaster area in New Orleans or something like that, the president comes along and he says, okay, we're going to declare this to be a disaster area. And you know what they do? They come along here and they take our tax money from Missouri and ship it off to New Orleans and California. So it impacts upon me. The sodomy that's being practiced in California causes a result. The result over there is punishment. The punishment causes a lot of damage. Damage costs a lot of money, and then it impacts upon me in Isabella, Missouri. I can be a real nice guy. I'm not doing all those bad things, but I got to pay for it. So I don't want to pay for that. And so there's a way around that, and it's called tithing. If you practice this law, you tithe instead of pay the income tax. Instead of practicing Social Security and limited liability, you practice strict liability and property and property rights. And so it takes me out of that tax loop. And so all the rest of you are being punished for the wrongdoing of others out there because you yourselves are involved in wrongdoing. And any time that we're in violation of any of these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, then the bottom line to that is we are wrongdoers, tortfeasors, we call that in law. Committing torts. Now, when you commit a crime, you commit a violation of the law, you not only sin against somebody else, but you sin against your own body. The guy that goes out and commits adultery, let's think this through for a second over here. You know, you're going to have a good time. I've done this, and I know how this works. So I don't want you to think that, you know, I'm some religious guy over here trying to get you to give up on Flo's horse. You know, I mean, Martha down at Flo's is a sweet girl, and God, everybody loves her. Not just me. I mean, everybody wants to bed down Martha. But I want to point out that if you get too many men bedding down Martha, that Martha pretty soon comes down with venereal disease and passes it on to everybody else that's having sex with her. It's just, you know, it's the way life is. It's the penalty that we pay for practicing adultery. Now, I've got a new saying over here. There's no sex like sex with your own wife. I mean, you can go out here and have sex with anybody you want to over here, but the truth of the matter is, when God designed women, you know, he designed marriage, he put this process, this product together. There's just nothing like your own wife. Now, you know, most of you guys sitting out there saying, well, no, I don't know about that, George. Well, that's because you guys haven't practiced that law, and you haven't gotten the full benefits of it. You're getting some of the benefits, but not many. And pretty soon, what's going to happen here is your lady's going to divorce you, hit you with alimony and child support, and that's the results that comes from going down flows. That isn't very pleasant. Then she's going to poison your kids against you, try to keep you from seeing your children, and then you got this custody battle cooking over here, this visitation battle cooking over here. That's not very pleasant. I tried that, and I didn't care too much for it. No, there's just no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. So if we go back and we take a look at this cause and effect relationship applied to economics, and we've been using unjust weights and balances, and then the results are we got inflation, we're headed to hyperinflation, then depression. Look at the values of your houses. Look at your jobs being outsourced. There's 15 economic laws. We're not practicing those economic laws. And indeed, our princes over here, our elders of Israel, they're encouraging us to borrow money and pay interest and usury. God told you not to do that. Don't do that. See, our politicians come along and they promise us peace, peace, and then they deliver war. They promise us prosperity. Then they give us the fifth plank, central banks, which produces inflation, poverty, and depression. No, they promise us health. They say, get vaccinated. So we go down and get vaccinated. The vaccine has thimerosal in it. The thimerosal gives our children sudden infant death syndrome. That's not pleasant when your baby dies. And or autism. Which just happens to come from the protocol, number 10. It says to wear everyone out by dissension, animosities, feuds, famine, inoculation of diseases, and want. Until the Gentiles see no other way of escape except an appeal to our money and our power. Communism calls for inoculation of diseases. You didn't get that from the Ten Commandments. No, God promised us good health, no disease. He says, I won't lay these diseases that I laid on the Egyptians on you if you practice my law. Well, we didn't practice his law, and so we got the diseases laid upon us. I've been through that a time or two with you. Let's take a look here and see, well, what can we do to turn this around? What can I do? How do I change this? If you start off with a child, now you've already given your child to the state. You already got a marriage license and a birth certificate, and you're terrorized by a social lady. If you start off with a child when he's young and you train him up in the way he should go, when he's old, he won't depart from it. The sooner you start, the better. Doesn't have anything to do with not beating your kid and killing him or bruising him or anything else. The kid's 18 months. You put him through his drills. You train the child like you train a dog. Come here, go there, stand up, sit down, bring me the slippers, sit in this chair. And you teach the child obedience. You're his father. You're his mother. And both parents, we discovered this years ago, both parents need to be involved in this. If I had a child that was testing mom and dad against each other, and my wife would report to me that the child was disobedient, then I would punish the child, usually with a spanking. When your mother speaks, that is the last word on that subject. That was the rule when I had children, young children growing up. I said to them, I said, when your mother speaks, that is the last word on that subject. My children did not question mother. I didn't allow it. Conversely, mother did the same thing. When your father speaks, there's nothing more to be said. Now, when that child gets to be 18 years old, or 21 or whatever, and he wants to leave home, that's fine. And if he doesn't want to follow the education and the training that he got, that's his decision in life. He's an adult, free spirit. But your duty as a parent to make sure that that child doesn't violate the fifth commandment and doesn't shorten his life thereby, when your mother speaks, that's the last word on that subject. When my dad said, your hair is too long, here's the money, go get it cut. And that was the last word on hairstyle. I never had long hair. My dad didn't have long hair. My granddad didn't have long hair. And if you leave a child to his own devices, he's going to ask, well, what's wrong with long hair? Why can't I grow my hair like my sister? And he will. He'll experiment. Now, in the scripture, it says that long hair on a man is a shame to him. Long hair on a woman is a glory to her. So if the women who have long hair aren't guided and directed, they're going to say, well, why can't I cut my hair off like my brother Butch? Why do I have to have long hair? Because that's what God decreed. God, the Creator, said long hair on a woman is a glory to her. That's what he likes to see in females. He likes to see females with long hair. And he likes to see short hair on boys. Now, if you want to get along with your boss, if you want to get a promotion or a raise, if you want to score points with people, if you follow their advice, if you do what they do, if you follow their example, they like that. And if you don't, they don't like it. In fact, that's why you'll probably get fired. If you wear long hair, you know, it may be your right, Bob. Maybe you can do that because it's your right. But if your boss doesn't have long hair, you're not making any points. And if you want to show him that I'm a rebel, I'm a free spirit, go ahead. But you're probably going to need a new job. Now let's take a look at homeschool. The schools, the public school education system, is designed to destroy the family. It's done a marvelous job. It's already succeeded. If you don't want it to destroy your family, then why don't you educate your child in your own home school? Then you won't be worried about your kid telling the teacher that you punished him last night. Because here's what happens. If you're a drill sergeant in the Army, and the recruits that you're trying to train find out that you don't have any power over them at all, do you think those recruits are going to follow your instructions and do what you tell them? You see, you school teachers, the reason that you don't have order in your classrooms and your children are running around like wild banshees and you're blaming it on ADHD, well, there is some truth to that. You know, these children are being drugged with sugar. They become hyperactive, uncontrollable. Hell, they can't control themselves, much less you control them. And, of course, as a result of that, they can't learn anything. So if you want to know why your children are dumb and they can't learn anything in school, they can't sit still. You got this kid drugged out of his mind with sugar. He's hyperactive. So to calm him down, you give him a downer. You give him a drug called Ritalin. The kid's drugged out. Can a drug addict learn? I mean, if you think a druggy child, 6 years or 8 years old, can learn anything, hasn't it dawned on you yet that the ignorance of our children has a cause somewhere along the line? There weren't any dumb children when I went to public school. When I went to the public school, God, they were terrible. We didn't have sugar. Well, not as much as we are today. We didn't have ADHD. We had a few wild hairs running around the room over there. But let me tell you, Mrs. Wilds in the third grade, when Mrs. Wilds said, sit down, everybody said, yes, ma'am. So when Mrs. Wilds said to me, sit down and fold your hands, I just said, yes, ma'am. I sat down, folded my hands. By the time I was 8 years old, I had that drilled down pat. Can your child, when you say, Junior, sit down and fold your hands, does he say, yes, ma'am? Yes, sir. Sit down and fold his hands? Or does he look at you with a stupid look like, what does that mean? Who in the hell do you think you are? Do you know I'm going to report you to the teacher? You can't boss me around. That kid needs to be brought under control. And you can rest assured now the state's going to bring that kid under control at some point in time. They may have to kill him in order to do it. They may have to lock him up in a penitentiary, and you may have to pay $40,000-$50,000 a year to store him there for the next 40 or 50 years. But, you know, at some point in time, it's going to happen. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in 112 countries plus daily over the internet and radio. Now, for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, all 8 schools follow that format. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information on the Law Hour website, it's updated weekly and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order one by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, newsletters to our listeners. But these endorsements and recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, they could be religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or maybe even ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program They're mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then we invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about incorrigible delinquency. Let's see if we can raise a kid without him being delinquent, without having him taken away from us by social lady, and without getting a run-in here with a divorce court. Can we do all of this? The answer is yeah, we can do this. And we start off with a little direction, a little education of our own. Now, I teach a class here on family relations called Family Court. And in the process of that, we run over such things as, well, when a divorce comes up, how do you get a divorce? Before you get a divorce, you got to get married. Before you get married, what should we do? Should we have a prenuptial contract, an agreement written up by the boy and girl? Or should we go ahead and get a marriage license and let the state spell out the terms and conditions of this marriage? And it's a choice that everybody has to make. And nearly everybody elects to go with the marriage license. When we have children, should we get a birth certificate, or should we enroll that child in our family Bible? Should we keep our own genealogy and our own family records, or should we turn that over to the civil law state? That's another choice that we all have to make. Now, it used to be that the patriarch of the family took the family Bible down, passed it from generation to generation, kept your family genealogy here. Today, we don't do that. We let the county recorder do that. Well, again, that's a choice that you make. But if the state's going to do it, the state has to have a stake. And if the state has a stake, then the state has to have jurisdiction. If they got jurisdiction, they got power. If they got power, where does that leave you? So if you want to control your own family, then why don't you take control? Why don't you take charge? Why don't you take responsibility? Instead of practicing limited liability and insurance, why don't you practice strict liability and responsibility and do it? Pick up the reins of the horse and let's drive him. Let's rein him in. So I recommend that we take a look here at the book of Proverbs, take a look at these 15 statutes on child rearing, and let's put them into operation. Let's take the kid out of the public school, and let's take this sex education in the public school and let's turn that around. The child needs to be educated to sexual reproduction. I don't deny that. At some point in time, everybody has to understand about sperm and eggs and about sexual reproduction and lovemaking and so on. But should it be a sodomite homosexual in the public school sex education class, or should it be mother and father at home? No, it's just my observation. And even if this guy in public school, you know, or this woman isn't a lesbian or a sodomite, it's a stranger. Let me ask you this. Do you think Ronnie Mitchell's mother should be teaching little Georgie Gordon about sex and sexual reproduction and sex education, or do you think maybe Ronnie Mitchell's mother should be teaching the Mitchell kids, and Georgie Gordon's mother should be teaching little Georgie Gordon? Because in the old days, that's the way we used to do that. Let me tell you, boys and girls, my grandma had good sex education. She had 7 children and then raised about 7 or 8 more during the Depression years. My granny was a great mother. She was a great grandmother. She was good at it, too. And she didn't have any problems with sex. She understood sex. She understood marriage. She understood responsibility. She knew her place as a woman, as a wife, as a mother. And she passed it on to me. Believe it or not, my granny could teach her grandson about sex and reproduction. My dad did that too. My dad, he understood how babies were made. He didn't believe that they came by way of storks. And I don't understand why it is that people do that. They teach their children that Santa Claus comes down a chimney and babies come from storks. Those are 2 damn lies. Why don't we start off by teaching our children that babies come from mommies? They come from females through a sexual reproduction process. What's wrong with a child 3 years old seeing a bull breed a cow and then ask the question, Daddy, what's the bull doing? Are you so damn incompetent that you can't explain that? He's breeding the cow. Oh. Then the little girl will say, I wonder if daddies breed mommies and that's where little babies come from. And she'll ask you, yes, that's where little babies come from. Doesn't have anything to do with storks. Of course, you people are all divorced from the farm. The little girls don't see bulls breeding cows. And so mommy and daddy tell them, oh, you came from the stork. And so this kid goes to school, and they start teaching him sex education. Pretty soon, the kid says, hey, listen, I'm getting the straight skinny here at school. And here at school, they tell me 14-year-old girls should be good sex partners to 14-year-old boys, and that sexual experimentation is real good. You can sell that to a 14-year-old kid. You don't need a lot of work to do that. Hell, they want to do that anyway. You got to work hard to keep them apart. You don't have to work very hard to get them together. Hell, if you did absolutely nothing, left them alone, they'd figure that out. It's God, the Creator, that said that that's not a very good plan, that these people ought to be practicing sex within marriage because it leads to reproduction. Reproduction has little babies, and these little babies have to be taken care of, fed, clothed, housed, educated, and so on. 14-year-old mothers aren't very good educators. I don't think there's much that anybody can learn from a 14-year-old schoolgirl with a baby. I think we'd all be better off if 14-year-old schoolgirls waited a little longer until they got to be 24-year-old women. And I think of you 24-year-old women, if you would listen more to your mothers and your grandmothers out there about sex and reproduction, I think you'd do a lot better than listening to that fag in your sex education class who never produced a single baby in his life and probably never will. I think grandmothers make better midwives, better deliverers of babies than do doctors. I never met a doctor who ever had a baby. Now, I suppose there's a few women doctors out there that have had some babies. I haven't met any. I've met a lot of pediatricians that were men. Not one of them ever had a baby. Always made me wonder, why would you women want to go to a man to learn how to have a baby? It just made sense to me that if I was a woman and I was going to have a baby, I think I'd want to go talk to another woman who already had one of those once before. And then I could say, what happened? How'd that work? Why'd it work that way? What should I do? How do I do that? Now, the same thing is true here with educating your child at home and discipline. My dad told me one time about discipline. He said, you know, son, there's always going to be somebody telling you what to do. There's never going to be a time in your life that there isn't going to be somebody in authority over you who's dictating and telling you what to do. And he said, discipline is being able to follow those instructions. You got to train yourself. You got to discipline yourself to follow those instructions. Then he went on to say, I'm just a kid, you know, I don't know, 11, 12 years old. He said, now, son, you're always going to have authority over somebody. And I said, who? Who do I have authority over? I had a little brother, but, you know, Dad wouldn't let me have authority over him. He says, you have authority over the dog. And you command the dog. You say, go fetch. You say, come here. You say, sit down. The dog obeys you. And you have to manage this authority, this power, in the best interest of the dog. Don't beat the dog. Don't starve the dog. You have to be responsible. See, my dad, he believed that I had to take food out and feed Clipper. You know, I had to water him. I'd take him out and walk him. I had to play with him and train him. You know, there was responsibility with the dog, you know, just a little kid. And I liked my dog. You know, he was a great companion. And I had authority over my dog, and I corrected him constantly. You know, then as I got to be a big kid, see, I'm in the cattle business now, and I've got cows out here, and I have to break these cows. I have authority over those cows. And then I have to exercise that authority, you know, with intelligence. And a policeman, you know, they should be exercising authority with discretion. They shouldn't be holding curbstone court like with Rodney King. They had a job, and they did it. They captured him. Now they're supposed to turn him over to the next step. They didn't. They went out there and they said, we'll fix this guy. See, they're not empowered with the power to punish. They're empowered with the power to capture. And they did their job well. Mothers and fathers have duties with education and discipline. And if you don't exercise that, then something is going to go wrong. Something isn't going to work out right. There's going to be a conclusion to that. Juvenile delinquency is created by mothers and fathers who do not train up children in the way that they should go. And the mothers and fathers don't train up those children because they suffer from fear. Oh, my God, what will the teacher say? What if I bruise this kid? Say. All right, so let's be careful that we don't bruise him. Let's not send him to public school, then there won't be any teacher to report you to. But by the same token, let's be intelligent people, and let's not beat this kid to death. Huh? Why don't we do that? You know, as parents, we all have responsibilities. You've got to teach him and train him. Now, some kids take a little bit more than others. You know, so some cows take a little more than others. As I speak, I got a wild one out here now that I'm trying to break. I'll break her. And I've been at this, you know, for 40, 50 years. I never had a cow I couldn't break yet. You know, I may find one of these days, but it hadn't happened yet. Every cow I set out to milk, I milk her. Every cow that I set out to break, I break. Every cow sticks her head in the stanchion, I close the stanchion. I feed her well, take care of her real good, and then I collect the milk. And if you get in my way and cause me a lot of static in the process over here, cow, it's going to hurt real bad, and you ain't going to feel too good about this, and maybe I won't either. I've been stepped on, kicked, knocked down, run over. It'll probably happen to me once or twice more. Policemen are in the same boat, you know. They typically, you know, if they turn on the lights, people stop, they give them a ticket, and they drive off. Once in a while, they find some guy steps on the gas and leads them on a high-speed chase. Sometimes the guy gets rough with them and hits them and shoots them and does all kinds of things. Well, you know, at some point in time, that guy's got to be broke. By God, there'll be somebody out there that can break you. So before we get to that point, you know, let's be intelligent about this. When the light comes on, let's stop. When the policeman comes up, yes, sir, no, sir, you know, there's a way to deal with policemen, and there's a way to deal with Aunt Bessie. When Aunt Bessie says, hey, you, go wash your hands, get ready for dinner. Yes, ma'am, and we go wash, and we get ready for dinner. We come in, hey, listen, everything worked out pretty good. But when you got uppity with Aunt Bessie and you said, well, I'm not going to eat, Aunt Bessie gets her switch, whips your bottom, you're going to eat. Now, if you want to get real uppity, then we'll have Uncle Otto come in here with his belt. And then if we need to, then we'll bring in Cousin Barney. Cousin Barney, the big guy, weighs about 220 pounds, picks up 6, 8-year-old kids, shakes them until their teeth rattle. Whatever it takes is what we're going to do, whether it's the sergeant in the Army, whether it's mom and dad, whether it's the policeman on the street. Now, if you teach that child starting out when he's 18, 20 months old, 24 months old, and you teach him his drills, he comes when he's told to, he sits down, he eats. Here's another thing. Kid sits down and says, I don't like that. I was sitting here the other day, an 8-year-old kid, he says, I don't like that and I won't eat it. I went through that. Every kid does. I don't like that and I don't want to eat it. Okay. My dad used to sit down at the table and say, this is what we're eating. This is what I'm going to eat. This is what your mother's going to eat. It's what your brother Jimmy's going to eat. And son, it's what you're going to eat. See, I didn't have any input into the menu. And at age, 6, 8, 10, 12, I did not know that broccoli was good for me. And I didn't know that avocados were good for me. I didn't like broccoli, and I didn't like avocados. And I didn't want to eat them. Today, I eat broccoli, and then I eat avocados. And then I thank my daddy for teaching me how to do that. A very simple process. No fuss, no muss. When I got up at him one night at the table, I don't know how old I was, 6, 8 years old, something like that. And I announced that I wasn't going to eat those avocados. And Dad said, well, that's fine. You're excused from the table. No, I hadn't finished my dinner. I didn't eat anything. I just said, I want those avocados. He said, you're excused. And I said, well, I'm not through eating yet, and I want to eat. He said, you're not going to eat. You're excused. You have just announced to us that you do not like the food that we serve here and that you are not going to eat it. And he said, that's all right by me. You don't have to. And that's when he told me, he said, this is what I'm eating. This is what your mother's eating. And I was excused from the table, and I went to bed, and I didn't eat anything. Period. Next morning, we got up for breakfast. We sat down at the table. We're going to eat. I don't ever remember after missing one meal. Now, I might have done that twice, maybe even three times. I can't think of it right now. But I do remember that one event over the avocados. And I discovered that when I sat at the table, I didn't have to eat all avocados, but I did have to eat a little bit of one avocado. I had to try it, whether I liked it or not. A lot of things I didn't like, and I don't eat them to this day because I don't like them. But at Dad's table, everybody took a little bit. I mean, if Mom served creamed corn, you take a little bit of creamed corn. If there's avocados and tomatoes, you take a little avocado and tomato. You take a little bit of everything. And if you don't, then you will be excused from the table. And we'll try this drill again tomorrow morning. And if you don't like it tomorrow morning, then we'll be excused for breakfast, and we'll try it at lunch. I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, without a doubt in my mind, at some point in time, and with me it was just one meal, but maybe you've got a real wild March hare there. Maybe you'll take two or three, I don't know. But at some point in time, that kid will sit down, shut up, and eat whatever's put in front of him. And children around the world who are hungry most of the time and don't have enough to eat, they don't bitch about avocados and broccoli. Only spoiled brats do that. And I only practiced spoiled brat once, maybe twice. And if I was really off the wall, I might have done it a third time, but I can't remember that. If I did, and I don't think I did. So ladies and gentlemen, children can learn to eat. Now, they can also learn to shut up. Children are not dumb. And they know that you hate commotion. And they will create a big scene and a big commotion. And the busier the place, like a restaurant maybe. Okay, now here's the way you solve that problem. My little boy's about, 3-4 years old. Ted was his name, Ted. And we were in a restaurant, and he started to fuss and whine. And I said, no. And I guess he wanted to test me. So he fussed and whined again. So I got up, and I took the little boy out to the car, and I spanked him. And I brought him back. He finished crying, came back. And I said, we're going back to the restaurant. We're going to sit down. We're going to eat dinner, and you're going to shut up. I took him back, and then he started to fuss. See, he knew that the place to fuss was around all these other people because I didn't want to take him out to the car and spank him. So I got up, and I took him out to the car and spanked him again. I'd do that 3 times. Same restaurant, same meal, 3 times. And each time I spanked him, it hurt more. After the 3rd time, I brought him back. We sat him down. No more problem at that restaurant. I never had a problem with that kid from that point on. And I told you the other day that my boy went into this neat restaurant in Vallejo, California. We all sat there and we all ate. He's probably 5, 6 years old by that time. Maybe 7. People don't like little children in the restaurant because the parents cannot teach and train those children to sit still, shut up, and eat dinner without causing a big scene. I can do that. And so can you. You can teach that and train that child in any aspect you want. You got a kid over here who doesn't like to do his homework? Homework's no problem. What you do is you give him an alternative. The alternative is you can do your homework and you can shut up. Or you can complain about it, make a big scene, and there's going to be a lot of pain, anguish, tears, weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth. And then carry through with it. When the kid opens his mouth, you take off your belt, you whip his ass, and you say, now there's an alternative. There's homework, or there's more pain, suffering, and weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Now it's your choice, son. What do you want to do? If this kid isn't brain dead about the first, if this kid gives you that static the second time, you didn't inflict enough pain. He can't connect the pain. He can't get the dots and the lines hooked up. That's all. And I got that right out of the book of Proverbs. I got that right from the creator of the universe, you social ladies and you jerks out there in the public schools that can't keep your kids, keep your children under control. Got it right from the designer, right from the potter, who's got the clay right here on the wheel. He says, hey, listen, you wanna mold this child into something that's pleasant and pleasing and that you're going to be proud of, it takes some work. That's all. But you got to get control over the child. The best control the parents had over their children was the power of life and death. You talk about the ultimate power. Boy, that's it. You talk about a power trip now. And you got that from God Almighty himself, and then you threw it away. You gave it to social lady. What in the hell did you give the power of life and death over your child to a total stranger for? And somebody's going to say, well, there are some people out there that couldn't control it. There's always been people like that. There's a remedy for it. Adults who cannot control capital punishment over their children themselves are subject to capital punishment. What keeps all of us in line? It's the fear of the punishment. And in the Bible, God uses that term. He says that they might hear and fear. That's right. The purpose for hearing is education. The purpose for fear is discipline. That's what the policeman's out there for. Now you heard the law. Now the policeman is out there. He's wearing that billy club and that gun on his hip. Do you know what that gun is for? That gun is to administer capital punishment, if that's what it takes. I contend that that power ought to be in the hands of parents and used the way God intended. Wild new idea. All right, I'm out of time again, kids. I got to leave it right there. So we're going to remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in over 112 countries daily over the internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, we'd like to invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We'll leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.